thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
Just under 8 hours to go. And more battling as the BMW and the Corvette. Well, it was Corvette BMW. It's now Corvette BMW Corvette. In fact, no, it's now BMW Corvette, because the second Corvette has been passed. What a run that has been by Tom Milner, from third to first in the space of a lap by Jesse Kron, from third to first in just about a lap. But it's bad news for the other car in the RLL stable. Shea Adam.
It's gone behind the wall, John. I'm investigating as to why.
Well, amazing, isn't it, how it seems that the fickle finger of fate can do so well for one car in a team and kick you in the shins in the other car at the moment. The two Porsches, by the way, are right with the BMW and the two Corvettes. So the remaining five cars in GT Le Mans are separated by barely a couple of seconds, as the leading cars in DPI are cutting their way through there, and some of the LMP2s as well. Fabulous racing for GT Le Mans as it starts to light up just a little bit, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's so intense, isn't it, that battle for GTLM. Really, really cool. Such a shame we're losing. It seems to be losing that number 25 car, but everybody else is right in it. And, you know, it's just kind of a game of cat and mouse, I think, at this stage in the game in GTLM. In GTD, it's still close also between Brian Sellers and Matt McMurray. Kevin McNeil's fallen back in the third position, but that's just fine. 13 seconds or so back. Carl Kirkwood is up into fourth position. He's overtaken Lars Kern in the number 9 Pfaff Porsche. So it's Kirkwood who runs in fourth position in the number 12 car for Aim Vassar Sullivan.
Shea Adam with an update on the number 30 car. Go ahead.
The hard point Audi did come into the pit lane. The right team looked it over. They decided that it was okay, put Marcus Finkelhock behind the wheel and sent it back out. So that car, at least out of the pit lane, the 25, is still behind the wall, still working to get an answer on that.
Yeah, and what I haven't heard from Hardpoint is whether that was just losing the back end coming through turn 7 and spearing off to the right hand side, or whether there was some contact. I felt there might have been contact in traffic. There was certainly a lot of cars around it, but I am not the arbiter of that, and not really breaking headline news. I have known to be wrong in the past. Just saying. Dave Alcock has tweeted this: is the BMW number 25, by the way, is in a state of undress in the pit lane. All of the front clip is off, the bonnet is off, all of the wheels are off, it's on the high stands. That is something that is not the work of a moment. Now, didn't they have a power steering issue on this car earlier in the season on one of the BMWs? I wonder if that's where they're working, Shea. They seem to be working under the engine, but towards the right-hand side of the front of the car.
They have had that on the sister car at BIR, but I think that was last year that we had the power steering issue, because I remember actually staring at it. But for John, for Conor Di Filippi and Bruno Spengler, they're third in the championship hunt, albeit a long way back from Antonio Garcia and Jordan Taylor. But they're still fighting points, so this hurts, especially with both of the Porsches back this weekend. More points lost.
Dave Alcock, I think, capturing the thoughts of many of us here with this tweet at IMSA Racing, giving what a tough year everyone has had. Seeing the great events, the resilience shown by IMSA, all the teams and the organisation at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, I'm sure the late, great Dr. Panos would be very proud to see the racing that's going on right now. This event always seemed to be a favourite of his. Here is all I'm going to say to that, Dave. Well observed, and echoing, I think, the thoughts of many of us at this time of the year, because without Dr. Don, as he always insisted he was called — just call me Don, he would say, as I would say, Dr. Panos, just call me Don. Couldn't possibly, sir. Without him, there'd been quite a few people who would not have had work in the last nearly 25 years. Done an awesome amount for not just endurance racing in the US, but it has had a massive effect on endurance racing down through the years. I'm not sure that even with his ability to think big, that in 1998, when we all got together for the first Petit Le Mans, he thought that in the year 2020 it would still be going and it would have had such that big effect. Thank you, Dr. Dunn. Into turn one, Mazda, Cadillac, Acura, LMP2 in there as well, I think. Yes, there is. Also a couple of GTD cars, make that three GTD cars. And that is a cracking battle that's going on there at the moment. And that is the 55 car that's about to be lapped again for Ryan Hunter-Reay. Remember, that car lost a brake rotor, a brake disc early on, but it's now up to speed with Ryan Hunter-Reay in it. But that was the battle between Scott Dixon and Helio Castroneves for fourth and fifth that was going through a pretty tight group of GT Daytona cars headed by the Riley number 74 of Gar Robinson. And that will mean that it's Jack Hawksworth and Dylan McEvan for Ian Vassar-Sullivan Lexus and the BMW that was sitting in behind them. Exactly the sort of thing, Jeremy Shaw, we were talking about. Groups of cars all having their own battle, and then another group of cars, faster group of cars from a different class, all having their own battle, trying to pick their way through.
Yeah, that's right. That's why you've really got to pay attention through this whole race. There is not a moment you can relax. You've got to learn how to run fast in your car, but expect the unexpected, because so all of a sudden you look in your mirrors, there's no one there for the guys in slower cars, and all of a sudden there is. And likewise for the guys for the faster cars, the prototype cars, the track looks nice and clear in front of them. And then, just a few corners later, all of a sudden there's a whole knot of traffic in there, and you've got to work your way through. Still keep your pace up and not lose any ground, but also make the passes cleanly. This is intense competition. 100 laps, by the way, completed now.
Oh, nice,
by our
yeah.
race leader.
Nice little landmark there. And just in case you weren't with us earlier on, record distance in the 10-hour race, since it has been a 10-hour race, was completed last year. And that record distance was, Jeremy, remind me again.
It was 465 laps.
465. Let me write that down this time with a good old-fashioned pen and piece of paper. 465.
I've got that on my charge, really.
Yeah, there we go. Don't have to worry about that running out of battery or anything like that. Excellent. One pen, one piece of paper. Excellent stuff. 1,181.06 miles, by the way. Hello to Gerard Nouveau, who is on site at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. Gerard, hope you're enjoying Petit Le Mans. And we wish you all the best in whatever pastures new you head to after your decade, almost tenure for Le Mans Endurance Management, ELMS, and of course the FIA WEC. Thank you for all your hard work in the last 10 years. Wish we could be in the same bubble, but travel restrictions being what they are, etc., etc. 7 hours 49 minutes to go, coming up to 8 o'clock in the UK, 9 o'clock in Europe, so 3 o'clock in the afternoon, approaching very quickly here at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. It's been a perfect day, you know. Here we are, well through October, and probably about a week or so later than normal, possibly a couple of weeks later than we have had it in the past for Motul Petit Le Mans in the last 23, 24 years. And the weather gods have played very kindly, haven't they, with absolutely azure blue skies right through the whole day today. Temperature being pleasant, not quite cracked the 20 Celsius mark, but hovering around 18 or 19, which is temperate, particularly those of us from Europe, although we did have a very hot summer in Europe this year. But temperatures that most of Europe would be very happy with, they could have them at that level this weekend.
But not Floridian ladies.
No. Extra 74 layers for sure. Is it true that you volunteered to be bib this weekend as long as they blew hot air through the costume?
No comment.
I can neither confirm or deny that fact, says Shea Adam. Let's get back to the racing for a moment. Brian Stella still leads in GTD for Paul Miller Racing, but only by half a second. That's a cracking battle going on with Matt McMurray in the 86 Acura NSX. So a couple of mid-engine cars there leading the way. BMW number 24 having got past the two Corvettes. Jesse Kron has, in general terms, cleared off. He's a second and a bit up the road, quite honestly. And it is John Taylor and Tom Milner, second and third in the three and four car. But hanging on, the two Porsches there, Jam, Matthew Jaminet, who came out the pits actually leading in that. And he's now dropped down to fourth position. Fred McAvecky for Porsche in the 911. And that, I think, should be due in. In fact, they all should be due in relatively shortly, which might have something to do with the where the times are coming down. They'll be burning off fuel. Kron did 45 laps on the last tank of fuel and is about to go and complete lap 31. Oh, so they've got a wee bit of time yet. But Fred McAvecky slightly out of kilter with everybody else. Only did 37 laps on the last stint in the 911, has already completed 38 and is about to complete 39. So the Porsches perhaps not getting quite the fuel mileage of the other cars, or there was something else going on that we don't know about. But it should be McAvecky who stops because he is round about, let me see, 50, yeah, about six, seven laps further into his run. But they are all together again. Line of GT cars over the top of turn two, Jeremy, and the two Corvettes having to pick their way once again through that battle that it seems they weren't. They were going by, you know, it was the prototypes, wasn't it, that was going by that battle between Lars Kern. No, it was further back down, wasn't it? It was the Gar Robinson, Ian Vassar Sullivan, Jack Hawksworth, and Dylan McEwen battle. And now it's the GT LMs that are coming through at turn seven as the Porsches now have to deal with the Ian Vassar Sullivan car. But nicely done, everybody being very heads up about the whole thing. It looks like the GTD leader is about to lap that as well. Yes, it is. That's the red, white, and black Lamborghini in there. So a pivotal moment for those cars about to go a lap down on their class leader, Jeremy.
Yeah, interesting, and that certainly is interesting. And you know, this has been just a really intense race out there. Now we went back to green. Remember that we just had the one full course course running, haven't we? That
correct.
Was on at 1:16, so we'd be going. What's that?
An hour and 40 minutes would be going 40, now.
Okay, I have to do the conversion from west coast to east coast. Just looking at a few interesting things. You know, it's incredible. We saw that the leaders there working their way through the GTLM cars and the GTDs, all running at different paces, of course. And the gap between the race leading car number six and the second place car, Pippo Durrani, in four different laps, it was 10.6 seconds, 8.6, 5.0, 7.9. It's just incredible how much it varies. And that's purely according to, you know, how much they were held up and where on the racetrack. You know, they're all running pretty similar paces out at the front of the field. The Mazda in third position has certainly net dropped back a bit. It was about a couple of seconds behind number 31 car. Now it's about 8 seconds behind him. Elio Castroneves has overtaken Scott Dixon, which he would have loved. Back up to fourth position then for the Caliber 7 ahead of Dixie.
Yeah, Lee Diffie's not said that this year in terms of the IndyCar racing. Pit stop for the Turner BMW share and some news on the Infasa Sullivan number 14.
I was handing back over to Robbie Foley from Dylan McAvern for the Turner BMW. A bit of concern there as there was white smoke coming out of the brakes. This BMW, which had brake issues last year at Petit Le Mans in qualifying, and then earlier this year for the six-hour Petit Le Mans. Robbie Foley taking over, though, and going back out on the track with tires and fuel, so that's good news for them. No concern. As for the 14 Lexus, a little bit of concern there. Alan Prosser, the pink of the speed grabber, did manage to find the contact between the 14 Lexus, when Michael Licata was driving, and the 57 Acura of these bikes. We thought that it was damage coming off of the Acura, but indeed it was the right front dive planes from the 14 Lexus. This has negatively affected the car's handling and given it quite a bit of understeer. But I checked in with Aaron Dielitz, who said they're optimistic that the understeer will magically go away as the temperatures drop down. So right now, the car is a bit of a handful, and that's why it's actually dropped off the lap.
Jeremy?
Yeah, and losing dive planes is not good in this race, particularly for later on in the evening when it gets cooler out there.
Oh,
you need as much
point.
Downforce as you can possibly get.
Yeah, very good. Hello to Justin Henderson, who is trackside at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, listening in, I'm sure, on 98.1, 18th year in a row. And he said, I've been listening to what you've seen. Everyone who's here, thankful for all the efforts that have allowed us to attend. Big thanks to all involved. Well, you're representing everybody who can't be there, Justin. So thank you for getting in touch. And thank you for being responsible. The TV audience around the US and around the world will see plenty of people trackside, plenty of people on the edge of the fences there, but all in small groups. Good to see. Thank you for being responsible and for supporting IMSA and Motul Petit Le Mans at IMSA Radio if you want to get in touch with us. There's fuel and tyres, by the way, for the 911. Carol Brink asks, thank you for this, Carol, because I didn't make a note of this on a small piece of paper, but my writing's so bad I couldn't read it. Did we find out what happened early doors, Shea, to cause Gabrielle Aubrey to go into the barriers at turn one? Was it a mistake? Was it an issue? Or did he get help? Or have we not had that info through yet?
We haven't had the info through, but the team has not yet made a statement, which typically means driver error.
Ah, right, okay. Putting two and two together and getting 167. But there we go. So around the world on RS2 IMSA Radio and outside the US, streaming uninterrupted pictures from a beautiful afternoon here at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. 3 o'clock straight up here in on the outskirts of Braselton, Georgia, and uninterrupted sunshine since sunrise. Sunset coming along this evening will be 3 hours and 43 minutes officially before the time expires. That's an awful lot of darkness running. We have started later than ever before here at Motul Petit Le Mans. Pit stops due shortly for pretty much everybody as another gaggle of cars sweep through past the Michelin Tower on the start-finish line. 27 laps for Montoya, who, having been closed down by Pipo Durrani massively in the early part of the stint, and it got down to about 5 seconds. What we haven't mentioned for a wee while is that Montoya has found pace and is over the last 5 or 6 laps has been matching Pipo's pace round about the 1 minute 10 and a half, 1 minute 11 last time around, 1 minute 10 flat for Montoya. And that gap, Jeremy, has just eased out again a little bit and sits at 9 seconds now.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing how it fluctuates. But you're right, it's sort of, that's about the margin. It's kind of been staying on a if you're looking at consistency, a trends about what it's been. I mean, it's gone, as I said a few minutes ago, goes between 10 seconds and 5 seconds from lap to lap. But around about 8 or 9 is kind of what it normally is, it seems. The gap from second to third has gone out from what was a couple of seconds to 8 seconds. Now, I would expect number 77 car probably to be in next time around, or the lap after the third place car. Castro Neves is doing his best to get closer to the Mazda, but not really making much ground there. But he is pulling away from Scott Dixon, and Dixon instead is being closed upon now by Luc Duval at the wheel of the Mustang sampling car number 5.
Sunset officially today at 3 minutes before 7 Eastern summertime, daylight savings time effectively, in the US at the moment. So that's a wee ways off next, with the time at just turned 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And Jeremy, a note on LMP2.
Yeah, the number 52 car, Scott Huffaker, the youngster at the wheel of that car at the moment, is still leading for PRY Matheson Motorsports. So he was a full lap ahead of the rest of the field. That has been that has come down. I'm not sure whether Scott had a spin or a slow pit stop or whatever it was, but that gap came down to from over a lap, and a lap time is about a minute 12 or so for a P2. Get down to about 40 seconds. It's Job van Outert, who's driving now the number 8 car for Tower Motorsport by Starwitz. He is in second position, and that gap between those two drivers is staying pretty stable at around about 40 seconds all the way through this stint. The two of them are a lap ahead now of still a lap ahead of number 51 car, which should by another debutant, Austin McCusker. That's the Inter-Europol competition car number 51.
Johnny Palmer been very quiet in the last hour, just sitting taking it all in, and yes, then enjoying it, getting a nice little rhythm to this race, this GT Le Mans battle. Absolutely quality. Jesse Kroon's pulled away by about 4 seconds, and then the two Corvettes and the 912 Porsche absolutely together going up to turn 7 at the moment.
Yes, they are, and as I said, the driver lineups get a little break now and again. That's exactly where I've been for the last 60 minutes, but keen for a double stint now, effectively, with just over 7.5 hours to go. And the Porsche you mentioned is certainly hunting down the two Corvettes, 3 ahead of 4, but in the 912, it is Mathieu Jaminet doing the chasing in the better of the two RSR19s.
Sure, Adam has another pit caller.
One of my favourites, the white Mazda.
They're all your favourites, Sher. They are all your favourites.
They're like children. You can't pick a favourite.
Or cats in your case.
Hey now, the 77 Mazda comes in. Tristan Nunez did a double to start. Ollie Jarvis took over. That was completing his double, so I would expect that would be Olivier Pla taking over behind the wheel of the 77. And indeed it is. Excellent. I love when they stick to their plans. That would be the red helmet, though, for the number 6, Acura Team Penske. Juan Pablo Montoya out. Simon Pagenaud getting in. And Simon, who's always a very well-accomplished sports car driver, he came to this IndyCar thing fairly late, but he hasn't won this race in 10 years. It was 2010 when Simon Pagenaud took the victory. So it feels like it was just yesterday. It was a little bit more than just yesterday. The other car that's been in the pit lane, David, came up with the black tailpin for Acura Team Penske, as Simon Pagenaud cleared to leave for takeoff. And the 7 should also be doing fuel and tires, because Ricky Taylor did a double. Elio Castroneves did a double, but no, Elio staying aboard for a triple. So they are not yet employing Alexander Rossi in that number 7 machine. Fuel and tires for them as well. And just looking to see, nope, nobody else coming into the pit lane yet, but it's about to get busy because GTD are due too.
Yeah, it's interesting. Having a good look under the back of the number 7 Acura, but everything good. The car will be sent once the fuel is out. The fuel hose is out. Montoya with a 31 lap stint. I'm just pausing while I realise, yes, that's right, before he handed the car over. Pipo Durrani has come in at the end of a 32 lap stint for Pipo there this time, Jeremy.
Yes, it is.
Yes, I thought it was. That's very good indeed. Scott Dixon then should come through. No, he pit. So he didn't get an extra lap this time and therefore didn't get through to be effectively scored as the leader. That's interesting. That is a wee bit of a change there on this pit cycle, Jeremy.
It is. I think Scott perhaps wasn't completely happy with that car in the latter stage of that stint. He said he dropped quite a long way back from number 77 car who he was chasing initially. So I don't know what happened there. Maybe he was on older tyres. He wanted to get on some fresher tyres, conceivably. I don't know, but we'll keep an eye on that one, certainly. But it's still been, it's well within any tolerance, if you like.
Yeah,
you see
like
a leader in GTD, and he's on, has been on a slightly different strategy to get himself in the lead of the class, which he's done, and he now makes a pit stop there for Brian Sellers.
Which will start the pit stops, because don't forget, that car did come in after a short stint by Madison. Ooh, number 10 car just about gets out in front of the Lamborghini from Paul Miller Racing, but I think that was all right, not an unsafe release. Yeah, they balanced that back up again in terms of their fuel strategy and stint length because of the full course yellow, but of course they were stationary for far less time in the pit lane because they'd only stopped five or six laps previous to that. We'll have GT Le Mans stops in a couple or three laps time. The two Corvettes still battling away down towards turn 10A, and in fact have swapped over. So that's Tom Milner and Jordan Taylor with a little inter-Nissan Corvette racing battle. And whereas it was the three from the four, it's now the four from the three as they cross the stripe and head down to turn one. For the 48, that was a 40... Brian Sellers did a 41 lap stint, and that means Corey Lewis... Is it Corey's birthday today, Shea? Right.
Yeah, he's 30 minus one, because we've been doing all of these birthdays with saying they're turning 29 again or whatever. So it's Corey's 30th birthday next year.
Yeah, so he really is 29. Yeah, exactly right.
Missing driver in actually...
We never say it when it's true, do we?
No, 29. Racing driver in actually only 29, shocker headline. Yeah, absolutely. Right, thank you to everybody who is enjoying our enhanced timing on the live stream at radio-show.co.uk. You can also get that by going to timing.radioshow.limited, by the way, and that's that particular... enhanced timing, thanks to James and to Tim for getting that up as a Radio Show enhancement. That is available for all of the races that Radio Show Limited and at RSL Studio cover, as well, of course, as all the IMSA Radio ones as well. Matthew Jaminet into the pit lane in the Porsche shit.
And this should be Matthew staying aboard. No, they've done a driver change. So they have switched up their strategy too. Lawrence Vantour did a double to start. James Jam only did a single. And now it's Bam Bam's turn. Also into the pit lane, the number 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari. And I'm waiting to find out if Alessandro Balzon takes over. Then it'll be both of our birthday boys driving on track at the same time, because today is Alessandro's 29th plus a few birthday. So it's a good thing for him too. We've also got John Potter and the Magnus GRT Lamborghini into the pit lane for the 44 fuel tires, and very much likely a driver change. Hey, it is Balzon in the Ferrari. Yay! John Potter has been in the car since the beginning of the race, so I would be shocked if he doesn't get out now.
And I think John is the last of the drivers who started the race some 2.5 hours ago. Just a reminder, on driver times, only a 45-minute minimum for DPI and GT Le Mans, the pro classes. For P2 and GT Daytona, it's 2 hours and 30 minutes. And for those eligible for the Truman Aitken Award, which at the end of the season will get an automatic invitation to Le Mans, of course, that is 2 hours 30 as well. No driver can do more than 4 hours in any 6-hour period, and no driver in any class can do any more than 6 hours. I say that because it has caught people out before, and we've had people being caught out this weekend in other races, not getting minimum drive times in, or therefore exceeding maximum drive times as well. Now, I was going to say something else there, but it's gone completely out of my head. 7.5 hours to go.
You add then that John Potter, I think, has met his minimum drive time, so that probably
I'd agree with
John
that.
Potter's job done. He's done. He came in exactly at 2 hours 30 minutes. Job done, I think, for John Potter, most likely, and it will therefore be Spencer Pimpelli and Andy Lally to complete the job from here. And John's done a good job. You know, he was. I think still on the lead lap, or maybe just off it. I think he was on the lead lap.
Yeah.
So he's done an excellent first stint, long first stint, as John Potter, 2 hours 30 minutes.
By my unofficial timing here, 3 stints, 104 laps, 2 hours 33 minutes and 58 seconds. Now the pit stop time doesn't count, but the pit stop isn't 4 minutes. So I think you are right. On that, Jeremy. Actually, that might be from the start of the roll-off lap, actually. So that might be out by a little bit more than that. We'll have to check that with the team, because as we've said many times before, time spent in the pit lane doesn't count against your drive time unless you stay in the car. If you stay in the car, it does still count. But if you're getting out at the end, then it doesn't. That's the way it works. So I'll get Shea to drop them a line and see what's going on with that down at Magnus. But it must be mighty, mighty close. Right, now I've managed to change that from one screen to another. So let's get back to where we were. There we are. That's what I was looking for. I know what I was about to say. We're coming up on 2 hours of green flag racing, exactly what Jeremy and I love. And that means also we're getting close to... Oh, we've had over 2 hours and 30 minutes of racing, or just on 2 hours and 30 minutes of racing, and therefore getting towards what would be a normal 2 hour 40 minute length. Michelin Sport engineers telling us 67 Fahrenheit in the air, 77 on the track. That's about 18 degrees Celsius in the air, which is not too bad. We'd take that at the moment, those of you in Europe, although apparently it's going to be quite nice next week with a bit of high pressure coming in and the jet stream swapping around a bit, so we're going to get southerly winds rather than the arctic cold winds that we've had in the last week. Shea Adam, you've got some GTD pit stoppers.
The number 12 Lexus from Ambassador Sullivan is in the pit lane. Kyle Kirkwood brought it in. I did not see the door open. I didn't see a driver change going on there. So I think Frank Montecalvo and Townsend Bell getting a little bit more downtime as Kyle Kirkwood stays behind the wheel. And also into the pit lane, the number 74. Now, this car, I believe, has met the minimum drive time for the Riley Technology Mercedes. Gar Robinson driving that car from the beginning of the race has now handed it over to Lawson Aschenbach, but they did lose 3 minutes worth of pit stop times, and we now have 2 hours and 34 minutes elapsed. So I believe that Gar will have made minimum time by 1 minute.
So, Shea, the times in the pits, it counts if you stay in the car, though, doesn't it? You don't take the time you're not on the track off. So if you do three stints back to back, the time that you are credited with surely is the time from which you got in the car to the time you got out. You don't get the time you spent in the pit lane if you get out, but you get the time on the interim pit stops, don't you?
I'm going to have to check it when we do get the hourly update, but I believe the pit stop time, it stops whenever a car comes into the pits, and it resumes whenever a car leaves the pits. The time spent in the pit lane is null and void, no matter who is behind the wheel. This is a driver change, by the way. Tommy Milner out of the number 4 Corvette. That's the air gun that you're hearing in the background of my mic. Driver door closes, and I didn't see, actually, if it was Oliver Davitt who got into that car. It didn't look like it was a dark blue helmet, but there was some orange on it. It might be Marcel Fessler taking over that car. The way it goes out of the pit lane, that's a monster stint from Tommy Milner.
Yeah, very good. Very good indeed from Tom Milner. Out goes the dark grey and yellow car. And it was indeed the Swiss driver, Marcel Fessler. So as I am contractually obliged to say, hop Swiss for Marcel. Still has a great smile and a great attitude to his racing. Just getting the new Michelins up to temperature and pressure, being hassled at the moment by Scott Dixon as he goes up to turn number five. Just over 7 hours and 20 minutes still to go, Jeremy, and this is developing nicely, just the sort of endurance racing we like to see.
Yeah, certainly is. And I'll tell you what, Simon Pagenaud was clearly struggling to get into a rhythm when he left the pit lane at the wheel of the race leading car. When the car came into the pits, the gap back to second place was around about 8 or 9 seconds. That all of a sudden came down to just a couple of seconds to Philip Albuquerque, who was charging along there, having taken over from Pippo Durrani in number 31 car. That gap's now stabilised last couple of three laps, around about 3 seconds between first and second. The gap back to third place, which is now Olivier Plar at the wheel of number 77 Mazda. That gap also is remaining fairly constant at around about 8 seconds. And then about 11 seconds back to Elio Castroneves and Scott Dixon, who is about 21 seconds now behind in the fifth position. And he's about 2 or 3 seconds ahead of Loic Duval, who's also remained at the wheel of number 5 car. So the top six cars, all of the lead laps, separated by about 47 seconds after 122 laps. As we see the race leaders in LMP2 making a pit stop. Simon Trummer took over a couple of laps ago in number 52 car, and now Job van Aert also into the pits in the Tower Motorsport car number 8.
Yeah, good run from the young Dutchman. And just hearing from Shea, confirmation, any time in the pits does not count against drive time. I sort of understand that. Oh, contact! BMW versus Porsche, the two German marks going down the back straight. And a little hip check there by Jesse Krohn as he was going by Fred McAvecky. Very interesting there, and sitting right in behind them, Jordan Taylor would have had a great view of that as they were going down the back straight.
That's not Jordan Taylor, that's Marcel Fessler. That's become the GTLM lead now.
Oh yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, my apologies, my timing screen's just a little bit behind, but that was more than just a little rub there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd like to call that again, actually. But then when they were all having to get past the silver and yellow Corvette at the same time, I believe, and the BMW and the Porsche came really, really close, if not made a little bit of side-to-side contact. But yeah, they're already knowing that this is all about track position, albeit we're only just over 2.5 hours gone of a 10-hour race. But this could be pivotal, this part of the exchange. With black BMW now ahead of the 911 Porsche, and the two Corvettes on that same section of straight now between turn 7 and turn 10. So six car class, four of them, pretty much all occupying the same bit of racetrack. Fabulous stuff.
Yeah,
but all of a sudden, guys, the number 912 Porsche has dropped out of that group. I think his last pit stop was the culprit there. Maybe Shea can check on that for us, because all of a sudden the 912 car is 20 seconds behind the other four cars, the two Corvettes, and ahead of them the Porsche, and ahead of it the BMW of Jesse Krohn.
So yeah, there was contact, definitely. The BMW on the right hand side, the Porsche on the left, and it was wheel arch to wheel arch. They were both by that point already ahead of Marcel Fessler in the silver Corvette, despite the fact that the Swiss had led the previous lap. So all changing around, and it's the black BMW that now leads in the hands of Jesse Krohn.
Shea, what can you tell us about the 912?
Many thanks to Erin. She's got my back on this one. It was a bad driver change between the two drivers. Jam getting out of the car, Matthew Jaminet. One of the bungees on the belt broke, and that normally prevents it from sliding down into a place that you wish it wouldn't. And the belt actually slid between the car and the seat and the car frame. So it took Jam a little bit longer to try and fish the belt back out to try and get Bamber belted into the car. They wound up losing about 22 seconds on that driver change. And now this is going to be an issue that they have to deal with for the rest of the race, because a broken bungee does no good.
A broken bungee gathers no moss, I think, is the correct saying there. There's a few series now that don't allow you to have bungees for that very reason, interestingly enough. So for Nigel and for everyone else who were asking, there's your answer there, including Jeremy Shaw as well. And Jan 007 says, just noted on the last set of pit stops, that particularly for the number 12, Kyle Kirkwood in Vassar Sullivan Lexus, there was a running clock on the side of the car. What does that indicate? That indicates how long it's been stationary. And is that the fuel time, Shea, when the fuel probe goes in? Is that just the stationary time?
It's stationary time, but I use it to signify how long how much fuel it's actually taking. Because, for example, DPI cars can take about 30 seconds worth of fuel, whereas GTD cars can take 40 seconds. So if you basically back time it to how long it takes the probe to get in, you can tell how much fuel they need.
Yeah, the fuel goes in as soon as the car comes to a halt and goes up on the jacks. In fact, often before it goes up on the jacks. Just going back, and thanks to Lee Driggers, by the way, for confirming any time in the pits doesn't count against drive time. I understand why that would be the case, because, of course, if you went behind the wall, as the BMW number 25 has done, and by the way, it's still behind the wall.
It's just come out from behind the wall.
Oh, has it? Oh, yep. Right. There we go, just as we were talking about. So that all of that time does not count against Colton Herter, of course. So he hasn't gone over time, and neither has that counted towards his minimum time of 45 minutes, although he already had that. But I understand why that is the case. That is a slight wrinkle from certainly other series that I've covered, and probably you have as well, Johnny, whereby if it is in and out of the pit lane and you stay in the car, the pit lane time does count. It counts as track time, effectively.
Yeah,
service time isn't taken off.
I believe that's the way they do it at the Dubai 24 Hours, for example.
Yeah.
And, so it is basically timed, the drive time from pit out to pit in, and the pit
correct.
In as you're about to do your driver change, effectively. And anything else in the middle all constitutes to your minimum drive time, but not like that in this championship.
Shea, have you managed to find out from RLL what bit they had to change on the BMW? It looked like some kind of valve or some kind of housing that they had a very shiny version of on the floor at the back of the hauler.
Negative. They stopped answering their text messages when the 25 went behind the wall. I think everybody was trying to figure out what was going on, and then perhaps a little bit disconsolate that their opportunity to defend the 6-hour race win is likely out the window.
Yeah, well, it's understandable. I'm sure we'll mop that story up in due course, but I suppose they can have some solace in the fact that the sister car, looking very, very strong right now, nearly 10 laps into a new stint for Jesse Crone, who didn't clamber out of the number 24 car after a double stint from John Edwards previously. That suggests to me maybe that's the pattern for the race for the number 24, but Fred McAveekey, having got ahead of the Corvette number 4, now interested to see his average lap times compared to Jesse Crone. It's Crone who's marginally quicker, although we've got more information on McAveekey's stint, it being almost double the length in the 911 car. Marcel Fessler even fresher to the number 4 Corvette. Jordan Taylor pitted a lap later than Jesse Crone. Meanwhile, the gap at the head of the order for Simon Pagenaud is 2.5 seconds back to Philippe Albuquerque. They are more or less on the same pit stop cycle, just a lap separated the 6 Acura from the number 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac. So Albuquerque with slightly newer tyres.
Brendan Garashier says at IMSA Radio, in the past couple of years, has there been a better driver than... Sorry, I did that rather Chandler. Has there been a better driver than Albuquerque? Doesn't matter which side of the Atlantic he's on, he's always seems to be one of the quickest out there. He's had an absolutely extraordinary couple of three seasons and a variety of machinery that he's jumped into, a variety of teammates, JP.
I thought you were going to say a couple of 3 weeks.
Well, yes, he has had a fantastic couple of 3 weeks.
Yes. Winning the 24 Hours of Le Mans in class in LMP2. He's also the World Endurance Championship LMP2 champion with a round to spare, and last weekend became the ELMS champion as well. So, yeah, I mean, three fabulous trophies to add to an already fit to bursting trophy cabinet. And I love the fact that he can just flip from one championship to the next, you know, with very little lead-in time at all. I don't know what the turnaround time was like to get from Italy to the States and all of the protocol involved with that as well, to travel under COVID-19 restrictions. But he takes it all in his side, in his stride, the man from the north of Portugal.
Yeah, he was hermetically sealed into a box and sent over with his own oxygen supply, apparently. I've got no clue. I don't think I have had my feet on the ground for so long, for probably 40 years, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, wow.
Extraordinary. Thank goodness for the Channel Tunnel. If somebody would just build a bridge across the Atlantic, or, you know, some kind of vacuum that you could just pop into, like in the department stores in the old days, when they used
the old post office.
Yeah, they used to fire the thing up to the account. Maybe they could do that.
Tubes that they used to send checks.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm talking. that's effectively the idea for Hyperloop, which is that there's no friction inside those tubes if it's a complete vacuum, and therefore you don't have the aerodynamic drag, and then it means it takes far less energy to propel you along at a very, very high speed. Indeed, it's the same thing about like space, isn't it? Once you get going, there's nothing to slow you down. That's why you have to have retro rockets. And you don't have to use an awful lot of energy to travel large distances. That's the idea behind Hyperloop. And on next week's Open University, we will have a third level course. I'll just go and put my jumper on with the leather patches. Shay's just said, but how do you breathe? You're not in there very long, Shay. Maybe only 30 seconds, so you can hold your breath.
Yeah.
Go miles in 30 seconds. Miles.
Thousands. Yes.
Thousands of miles. It is still then... 7 hours and 11 minutes. Really, the fact that we've dropped into that sort of chat with still 7 hours and 11 minutes to go doesn't bode well, does it, for the darkness hours, of which we will have plenty. Still at the front of the field then, Acura Team Penske, Simon Pagenaud has taken over the number six car, but he's been closed in on by Philippe Albuquerque, just 1.2 seconds now, the gap between first and second. It's another 9 seconds back to Ollie Platt in the 77 Mazda Motorsports, the Multimatic DPI, in third position. Then Elio Castroneves, another 12 seconds. Excuse me, it's another 21 seconds further back. And another 50... No, I was right the first time. 27 seconds further back. And then another 7/10 of a second further back is Loic Duval in the Mustang sampling car. Top six then within 51 seconds. LMP2, Simon Trimmer is behind the wheel of the PR1 Matheson Motorsports Orica. He is on a lap of his own at the moment with Tower Motorsports, John Ferrano in second. Third is Austin Mikuska for Inter Europol. And fourth, Colin Brown, turning some very quick times in the Performance Tech Motorsports LMP2. And in fact, he has the fastest lap of the LMP2 race, 1:10.6. GT Le Mans, BMW, Porsche, Corvette, Porsche and BMW. But the gap between the second Porsche and the BMW was deliberate, because there's a long gap between those cars after it came in with issues earlier on. So Jesse Krom by 2.5 seconds to Fred McAvecky in the 911. So the black BMW from the 911 Porsche from Marcel Fesler in the Corvette. He's about another 1.2 seconds further back, but 3 seconds ahead of his teammate, who is 19 seconds ahead of that 912 after the difficult pit stop and driver change. GTD, Corey Lewis, happy birthday to him, is leading by 1.5 seconds. Don't forget to blow the candles out when you get out the car. Mario Farnbacher, Mayshank Racing in second in the Acura. Third, 17.5 seconds further back is Alessandro Balzan. Happy birthday to him too. More candles. Probably considerably more candles. Sorry, Balzan. And that's the Scuderia Corsa of Ferrari. 14 seconds behind him, it's Kyle Kirkwood, who's doing a cracking job, holding on a very solid fourth position for that Lexus. That's the number 12 car, ahead of Dennis Olsen, Porsche young driver for Pfaff Motorsport, and the number 9 car, top six, Misha Goitberg, is another 20 seconds further away. And I'm told it's also Jatinder's birthday today as part of the collective. Jet and the family, hope you are fit and well. No doubt you will be tuned in at, half past eight in the UK, half past three at Road Atlanta, Michelin Raceway, where we still have 7 hours and 8 minutes of the 2020 MotoGP Le Mans. Johnny.
Open road in front of Philippe Albuquerque right now, and he's trying to close the gap then to Simon Pagenaud, which is actually one of the smallest gaps in that top six currently. 1.5 seconds, because Olivier Pla has dropped further behind in the best of the two Masters, by far the better of the two Masters, after dramas very early on indeed for 55 and Harry Tinknell, with what we think was brake rotors exploding or rotor exploding, and they had to do a full change to the front rotors for that car to rejoin. But Pla is in the top three and lapping in and around the right sort of ballpark. It's tricky to judge a lap time in isolation because of the so much traffic that could be encountered on a single lap. Far better to look at average lap times therefore across the stint, and Albuquerque is about half a second better than Simon Pagenaud when you look at those two very different cars out front in the DPI category. You've got the twin turbocharged V6 of the Acura, and then the naturally aspirated 5.5 litre Cadillac in second position, and then even different machine in third with the straight four turbocharged for the Mazda. But all three cars easily on the lead lap, and then chasing Helio Castroneves in fourth position on the same cycle as the sister machine. So does that mean we're going to get both Acuras in next time around? That's about 10 laps away.
And Jeremy, nobody's been this close to the leader for a very long time. Other than behind a safety car, in fairness.
Behind a safety car, that's it. That's it. Other than that, the green flag. Yes. So Albuquerque is really putting the pressure on Simon Pagenaud here. Pagenaud sort of bled quite a lot of time early in the first three or four laps of his stint, getting up to speed. Totally understandable, absolutely sensible thing to do. Since then, the gap had pretty much stabilised around about a couple of seconds. That's absolutely fine. He's doing exactly what he should be doing at this stage in the race. But there's no doubt, the top four cars are definitely concertinaing together by a fair bit during this stint. Number seven car in the fourth position. It was about 10, 20, almost 30 seconds behind right after the pit stops. It's now the gap between from first to fourth is half of that now, 15 seconds. So, this just, it's just people being, some drivers being more cautious than others at this stage in the race. Exactly what you would have expected. In LMP2, Simon Trummer is extending his lead now. I think he's just put a lap on John Ferrano. So Simon Trummer took over from Scott Huffaker, did a really good last stint for that PR1 team in 52 car. John Ferrano, the gentleman driver, is now back at the wheel of car number 8. As I say, he's fallen a lap behind, but that's fine. He's, I think, a little bit around about almost a lap ahead also of Austin McCusker in car number 51 in third position. There's a couple of laps back to Colin Brown, who's driving Performance Tech Motorsports, and working his way through all of these LMP2 cars right now is that number 55 Mazda that had the problems early on. Remains five laps behind the leader and up into eighth position overall now. Just overtook John Ferrano on that last lap.
Yeah, and neat overtake it was. So Ryan Hunter-Reay pushing on. He's got Simon Trummer further up the road in order to catch. About 8 seconds before he'll find the PR1 Matheson Motorsport car. Meanwhile, a GT Daytona, Corey Lewis for Paul Miller Racing in the Lamborghini Huracan, leading in car 48, but only by 8 tenths of a second over Mario Farnbacher in the Meyershank Racing Acura. So that's the 86 pink car. Yeah, they're on the same straight now, heading towards the end of the lap, turns 10A and 10B, with the 16 car next up, but that's not on the lead lap. Ryan Hardwick at the wheel of the Wright Motorsports Porsche, actually ninth. So the two leaders in GT Daytona have just took a lap on that car, with Alessandro Balsan 14, nearly 15 seconds behind the leading duo. So they head across start-finish line once again. And Farnbacher really pushing on, leaning on those outside Michelin tyres through a tricky first couple of corners on this Road Atlanta circuit. GTLM led by Jesse Krohn in the BMW, the black M8 GTE, by just over 4 seconds from a charging Fred Makovicki. Now, Makovicki's much further on into his stint than the car he's chasing. And actually, Krohn steadily is just eking out a bit of a gap. It's only about 0.2 seconds on average per lap as Krohn ticks off another one. So very nearly 20 in the book for Krohn. This is the second of a double stint. And Makovicki doing the same, actually. So that 9-11 car was started by Nick Tandy, who did a shortish one up to the caution. And then Tandy did 37 laps in total. Makovicki actually eked it out even further than that. So these GT cars can do 41, maybe 42, 43 laps perhaps on a stint. We're about halfway through from Jesse Krohn's perspective, therefore.
I've started something now with this Hyperloop chat and travelling. Barry Skinner has just... And that's why I love doing these broadcasts, because you never know what's going to come up. Barry Skinner says, if you exploded a nuclear weapon behind a spaceship in space, you could reach the moon in 20 minutes or maybe 20 hours. My maths isn't as good as it used to be, but it wouldn't take long. Yes, but what would happen to you with the nuclear explosion that had just happened behind you, Barry? If I'm going to get into the tube and get fired down it, I don't want to turn out as an irradiated mess at the other end.
We can't guarantee you're landing, but you'll get there really quickly.
He said you'll get there, not that you'll get there alive.
Well, oh yeah, okay, fine. I don't want to turn up like some microwave turkey pieces. I mean, really. Thank you, Barry. I think I'll pass. I'm quite happy driving my own little tin can. Thank you very much indeed. At IMSA Radio, who knows where we are going to go with the comments. And don't forget, in just over 7 hours' time, the checkered flag will be out. But that doesn't end the conversation, although the race will be over by then. We start Michelin post-race tech. Hashtag Michelin PRT, please, if you would like something included in that, whether that's a question, something you've noticed, or indeed something you needed clearing up, just some point of order, I suppose, if you really want to. That's Michelin post-race tech. It's live on RS2 IMSA Radio, and that comes up in just over an hour. And just to confirm, Shea, our discussion about timing and drive time. What are we finding out now?
Double checked with two different sources within race control. It does not count in the pit lane. Your drive time starts and ends at the speed pylons.
Okay, so pit out to pit in. And then even if you go back out again, you don't start ticking over again till pit out back to pit in again.
Correct, which means that Magnus Racing is about 3 minutes short for John Potter's drive time.
Right, okay, I'm going to track that again and see what my machine says with now that it's had a time to tick over. Believe it or not, we've gone through another race hour, or we will do in 8 seconds. 7 hours to go here at Motul Petit Le Mans 2020, live on IMSA Radio and IMSA TV.